would you look at the time? Gosh. I gotta go, friends. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. This is behind us now, Ying Shui Di Zhang. Track is called All Over the Sky, from a new release called Riding on the Wind. We heard the great Japanese artist J.A. Caesar before that, from his 1973 album Kokyu Junreika, and a track called Wasan. Martok before that, from a 1978 recording, Serene Machines, released on 2014 on Music for Alien Ears. And we opened that set with Richard Bunger's Music for Pianist and Tape Recordist, from a compilation called Prepared Piano, The First Four Decades. Hey, I look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks, my friends. Hope you have a lovely holiday. Keep it stress-free as can be. And please welcome Monica Lynch filling in for me 1 week from today. I'll see you 2 weeks from today. And stay tuned. Mark Hurst's Tectonic is coming right your way. Bye.
Everybody, welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here. I am so happy to be able to spend this hour with you. Thanks for taking some time to listen in. I've got a special show for you today, and I just want to say at the outset, there's a lot of links and a lot of stories I'm going to be going through. You can find them all at tectonic.fm, tectonic.fm. And here on WFMU, you can go to WFMU.org and click playlists and comments. There are memes, topical memes, and there's listeners chatting away on the comment board, which you can join in. It is that time of year when people look back and reassess, and that's what I'm going to do. I want to talk to you about one of the common themes of the show, which is surveillance and what a year it has been in this area. Over the past 12 months, I've been thinking about this in terms of surveillance. We have been tracked. We have been watched. We've been nudged by our devices. We've been listened to and lied to and spied on, all while our data has been recorded and analyzed and stored and copied and leaked and hacked and sold off to who knows whom, all in the name of growth at any cost business models coming out of Silicon Valley. And you understand what that business model is. It is to make money by selling our privacy. That is the nature of the surveillance business. And so my intent for this show was and is to talk about our year of surveillance. And my original idea was, let's go back and look at the past year of Tectonic episodes and just talk about some of the highlights or perhaps lowlights of what's happened in surveillance. And so I looked back, and earlier in 2024, I ran two shows on surveillance. There was a show on February 26 that I called Dystopia Update, and I think it lived up to that name. You can listen to it. And then there was a little over 6 months after that, there was a September 9 show called Even More Devices Are Spying on You, in which I went deep on news that, in fact, it does look like some devices are actually listening to you, contrary to what all of the big tech companies have avowed over the years. We're not listening. We're not listening. You can listen to both of those in the archives. You can get to them at the Tectonic site, tectonic.fm, tectonic.fm. Again, that's February 26 and September 9 in 2024. And so I started looking through those two shows, and I found a bunch of really interesting and important bits of news about surveillance that I wanted to go over with you. But then something happened. I was looking at my notes, because I'm always taking notes on what I'd like to share with you, the listeners, in upcoming shows. And I realized that there were a bunch of surveillance-related news stories that had come out after that September 9 show. So in the space between that Even More Devices Listening to You show and today, as I'm broadcasting this, there's been so much new surveillance news that I've got to go through that first. And that might, in fact, take up the entire show. So my original idea of doing a surveillance look back year in review really has to start with the new news. This just shows you, friends, how often it is that we get indications of the endemic spread of this stuff. This just happening everywhere and impacting our lives and our work in so many different ways. So I want to start with a story here that came out very recently, and it was reported by an outlet called Sky News. And here's the headline: watchdog to issue new guidance after report finds air fryers may be listening. And yes, it is just what the headline says. Air fryers, one kitchen appliance that you might have thought, well, at least my air fryer isn't listening to me. Nope. There are now air fryers that are, quote, two air fryer manufacturers that have been sending personal data to servers in China. These are made by the Chinese brands Xiaomi, Tencent, and iGoStar. I guess there's really three brands. Maybe it's two manufacturers, but these three brands attempted to record audio on their owner's phone for no specified reason, according to the study. In addition to this, there was a report out about a Huawei smartwatch called Huawei Ultimate, which requested nine different kinds of phone permissions. And these permissions were giving invasive access to parts of someone's phone. That includes knowing the user's precise location, the ability to record audio, ability to access stored files, and the ability to see all other apps installed. So when we say these air fryers and smartwatches, so-called smartwatches, are conducting surveillance, that's what it looks like. Your location and recordings, taking over the microphone on your phone in order to record the ambient audio around the phone, accessing files, which I guess could include photos on the phone, and then sending any and all of that back to servers in China. Now, I don't want to say this in a way to somehow pin the blame on China as though we in the U.S. Don't have companies that do the same thing. This happens to be a report that's talking about Chinese brands. But this should, rather than saying, oh, thank goodness we don't live in China. No. No, this should be an indication that you need to be very careful about what you say in the range of surveillance devices here in the U.S. or in the U.K. or Canada, Australia, wherever you live and are listening to this. This stuff is everywhere. And perhaps you live in China. Wherever you live, this is happening. So use the air fryer as an example of the tip of the iceberg. In other words, if even air fryers are recording you and sending the audio footage back to servers out of your control without your knowledge or consent, consider what's happening with all of the other devices in your life. And this is when I need to say something I've said many times in the past, which is anytime you hear the word smart in the context of a digital device, you have to dispense with that word and replace it with the word surveillance. So if someone says, I just bought a new smartwatch, you can just replace that. You don't have to say it out loud. Maybe the person will feel offended. But you could just think to yourself, my friend just bought themselves a surveillance watch. And if someone comes to you and says, have you heard about the new smart air fryer from Tencent? You can just make the replacement. Do I really want a surveillance air fryer? Why in the world would you want an air fryer that records you and sends your voice out to third-party servers? It's lunacy. And yet, if it has reached air fryers, it has also reached all of the other devices that have processors and internet connections. The air fryer is low on the list of things that are going to get outfitted with surveillance, and here we are. Let's go to the next story. This is from Futurism. This is a story I meant to bring up a little while ago, and I kept running out of time on the show. This is about 23andMe. And it's funny, I was just at a gathering this past weekend, and I heard someone, I seemed like a smart guy, middle-aged guy, and someone brought up 23andMe or these genetic tracking firms where you get to send in a cheek swab, and he says, unprompted, "Yeah, I've been thinking about doing that. It'd be kind of interesting to see where my background is from. And I just thought, I guess this gentleman does not know the news about 23andMe. Because 23andMe is facing bankruptcy. I don't know if they have officially declared bankruptcy, but if they haven't, it's getting into that area. Their stock price has totally cratered in the recent past, and it's I believe it's because that there were multiple leaks of 23andMe data. Now, I know there was a leak about a year ago. They said it was not the genetic data. But whatever the leaks of the data were at a point where the point here is that they're facing bankruptcy, okay? And they hold the genetic data on many, many Americans. And so what Futurism pointed out, which is exactly the right analysis of this, I'll just read it to you. If 23andMe were to go under, what would happen to all of that DNA data? 23andMe is surprisingly open about its willingness to share private customer DNA data with service providers. From their privacy statement, quote, if we are involved in a bankruptcy, merger, acquisition, et cetera, your personal information may be accessed, sold, or transferred as part of that transaction. In other words, Futurism writes, your DNA information could easily be passed on to an entirely separate company. Okay, so this is another lesson, again, not to pin everything on 23andMe in particular. They're more a case in point about the risk of giving up your personal data voluntarily or involuntarily to a company that promises that it's going to be a good partner, and it's totally privacy-minded. It's never going to sell off your data to third parties in the normal course of business. But buried in the fine print somewhere, or maybe they won't even say this. I guess 23andMe had the decency to even to say it up front. Hey, if we go bankrupt, all the data that we have, that's an asset that's part of the sale. Yeah, that goes to the new owners. The acquiring company is going to get all of this data. And by the way, they are not beholden to our privacy statement. They may have their own privacy policies. You know, they may put your DNA information up for auction. $5 for John Smith's DNA information. Who wants it? So for anyone who has voluntarily given their DNA data to 23andMe, you should be a little worried. I don't know how else to, I don't want to sugarcoat it for you. Your DNA data may be sold off in the near future to some unknown third party that may want to do other things with it. It's true. And if you think to yourself, well, I didn't do it, but my cousin did, I'm sorry to say your DNA data is in there as well, because the way DNA data works, if anyone in the local vicinity, let's say, of your family tree sends in their cheek swab, that's close enough to yours that your data is essentially in that data bank as well. So you should be hoping that you didn't use 23andMe, and you should also be hoping that none of your relations used 23andMe. It's grim. I don't know. Sorry. I'm sorry. But I've been meaning to bring this up to you for a while. So that the next time a company comes to you and says, please give us this new kind of biometric or privacy-busting data, we promise, don't do it. Do not give up your private data. And if they say, well, we're going to give you a little treat. If you tell us, we're going to tell you that you're, 39% from England, isn't that cool? You know, I talked about 23andMe years ago. There was a report, if I remember right, that there were identical twins, okay, identical twins, you hear me? Both sent in cheek swabs independently to, I think it was 23andMe, it was one of those DNA surveillance companies, and they got two completely different readouts of where they were from. So you have to wonder how accurate these readings are in the first place, or if it's really just a party trick for entertainment purposes. So the treat you're getting isn't even necessarily scientifically accurate. Why in the world do you want to do that? Why would you give up your private data? So some people say, because I trust the company. Okay, maybe you trust whatever company it is, but if they ever go bankrupt, do you trust any company they could be bought by? What if they're bought by Mark Zuckerberg? And we'll see. You know, I hope to report back to you when 23andMe, if and when it is sold off, I hope to report back to you who it is that bought it so we can talk more about who now owns a lot of people's DNA information. Okay, let's go on. This next one is from our friends at 404 Media. This one was written by Emmanuel Myberg. And it's about Pokemon Go. Now, before I get to the headline, Pokemon Go, if you don't know, is this mobile game. People play it on their iOS surveillance device or their Android surveillance device. And what's called augmented reality. So it uses the camera. So you're walking down the sidewalk. And through the camera, it shows on the screen the sidewalk that you're walking down. But then it superimposes a little Pokemon. And then if you tap it or swipe it or something, you get to capture the Pokemon into your collection. But look, another block away is another Pokemon. So keep walking. Basically, it's a way for you to walk around the neighborhood. And when you get to certain GPS coordinates, you get a little treat on screen. And meantime, the camera is watching everywhere you go. So you should know by now where this is leading. And this is not news, by the way. When Pokemon Go came out, I reported on this because Niantic was spun out of Google, and it is a surveillance company. Niantic, which runs Pokemon Go, is a surveillance company. Yes, they say, oh, it's all for fun. It's all for entertainment. Bull. I called bull early on this company. It was so obvious what they were doing. And now it comes out, 404 Media reports on what Niantic is now proudly announcing about Pokemon Go. Here's the headline. Pokemon Go players have unwittingly trained AI to navigate the world. Well, not unwittingly if they were listening to Tectonic. As 404 Media's Joseph Cox wrote about the company Niantic. The company behind Pokemon Go has announced it is using data collected by its millions of players to build an AI model that can navigate the real world and could be used for robots. So here again, case in point, this is not all about Niantic, although Niantic is a surveillance company worthy of avoiding if you possibly can. But this is more a case in point. Again, look for the lesson here, okay? This is a mobile app that uses the camera while people are in motion, walking around. Anytime there is an internet-connected camera that's collecting footage while people are in motion, and it's owned by a big tech company, it is being used for surveillance. It's being used for surveillance for profit. That is a classic surveillance maneuver. And there's always going to be a treat. They're going to try to seduce you with some tiny, tiny, meaningless trifle of a thing. You get to swipe on a Pokemon. Oh boy, I can't wait. I can't wait to be surveilled as I walk down my own sidewalk to build an AI model for robots so that I can see a little cheap-looking graphic of a Jigglypuff. Thanks so much. I don't know how to thank you, Niantic. So people are kind of freaking out. What? Pokemon Go isn't a game? It's a surveillance training module? Yes, we've known it for years. And past Tectonic guest Roger McNamee, who wrote the book Zucked, about Roger being an early investor in Facebook and then coming to regret helping Mark Zuckerberg build that incredibly harmful, toxic sludge company. Anyway, that's in the archives if you want to listen to that interview with Roger. But Roger posted, quote, Pokemon Go users have unwittingly trained an AI to navigate the world. Reminder, he says, when Google Glass died, it was reborn as Pokemon Go. It was then further repackaged as Sidewalk Labs. Surveillance has always been the point. It is central to every tech product. Well said, Roger McNamee. And if you're wondering, Sidewalk Labs, I covered not that long ago interviewing Josh O'Kane about when Sidewalk Labs went to Toronto and tried to set up a surveillance neighborhood there, and they were summarily kicked out of town by a combination of activists and regulators and civil society groups who banded together and said, we do not want big tech surveillance in our city. Now, all I can say is if only the home of Sidewalk Labs, New York City, would do something about Google's surveillance on the streets of Manhattan in the form of those Link NYC Google surveillance kiosks and the new version called Link 5G, I'll add Google surveillance towers, then we'd be onto something. But for now, we're just passing the word about Niantic, which is a cousin of Sidewalk Labs, all coming out of Google's surveillance model. If your friends, if your neighbors, if your kids play Pokemon Go, just make sure you could consider if you want to tell them or not tell them. I don't know. But they're training an AI model for robots to walk the earth in short order. And I don't think that's a great deal. Oh, but they get to see a picture of Jigglypuff. Find Jigglypuff somewhere else, not in a surveillance app. Let's move on. We talked about Google spinoff. Now let's talk about what's happening within Microsoft. This comes from Vox on December 11. And the headline is, an AI that sees what you want to see. And this is about Microsoft. Okay, so we've talked about Microsoft a number of times in the past. And for a while ago, there was a Microsoft feature called Recall that Microsoft announced they were going to launch into the new version of Windows. And Recall was this thing that they tried to sell as some great thing for the users, which it was transparently a play for surveillance data for Microsoft's own enrichment. And here's how Recall worked. Recall is going to take screenshots of everything that you do on your Windows computer, and it's going to store that data. So anything you type, anything you click on, anywhere you go, anything you look at, anything you do, everything is going to be captured by this Microsoft Recall feature. And people freaked out. What are you doing? I don't want someone spying on me. And Microsoft said, well, we'll think about it. We'll think about it. We're not going to launch it. Okay, we will launch it. But it's gonna have an opt-out. And we promise, we super-duper promise, we're going to be really good citizens with your privacy-busting data that we have no reason to want to collect. Microsoft, we're simply trying to help you. It's purely for your convenience. And so that whole kerfuffle came and went, and I thought, you know, people should know by now that Microsoft, as a surveillance company, is looking for more ways to gather data from the privacy of people's activities on their own computer. I thought that was pretty well established, and Microsoft had engaged with the negative feedback. But then, it was, of course, not enough for Microsoft, and so they came out with yet another feature. And this is part of Copilot, because Microsoft has jumped fully into this new fad of putting AI into everything, everywhere, all the time, whether it makes any sense or not. AI here, AI there, AI layered on, AI, we're all about AI. And of course, for Microsoft, AI has to be imbued with surveillance. Otherwise, it does not accommodate the company's business model. So, and of course, AI means a lot of different people, a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And you can listen to my recent interview with Arvind Narayanan from Princeton talking about his book, AI Snake Oil. And we delve into that topic, what AI actually is and different kinds of AI. But in terms of Microsoft's use, when they're making marketing pronouncements, okay, about how we're adding AI, AI enabled this, a layer of AI. For them, it means surveillance. Microsoft is very simple. They want to find new ways to convince you to allow them to draw down your private data so they can package it up and look for ways they can sell it. Of course, they wouldn't sell your data directly. Oh, never, never, never. But it would be the analysis of that data, the correlations in your dossier, the relationships you have with other people. And yes, if someone really wants your specific data, they would sell that off as well. So here we have this AI obsession at Microsoft, and they have this feature called Copilot, which is going to bring AI to everything within the Microsoft ecosystem, if we can tarnish that word for the use of a big tech company. And Vox has reported that Copilot, this AI feature within Microsoft, now has a new sub-feature, which is called Copilot Vision. Doesn't that sound fun, Vision? To have Vision from Microsoft? Here's what it is. Vox writes, quote, Microsoft wants an AI companion to follow you around the web. It's called Copilot Vision. The basic idea is that Vision allows Copilot, Microsoft's AI-powered chatbot, to see what you're seeing in an internet browser. So, for example, if you're shopping for furniture on Wayfair, for instance, you can ask Copilot to find something with a bit of a Memphis design vibe, even if you have no idea what a Memphis design vibe even means. Copilot then scans the entire webpage looking for images that match what you're asking for and then points you in that direction. In other words, it can see what you're seeing on Wayfair and it can answer all your questions about it. Wow, unquote. So that's the Vox story. And the Vox story, as you can pick up, was pretty positive on the surveillance feature. So let's just take this at its word, because so often these big tech companies make announcements, they launch a thing, and it doesn't do half of what the marketing glop promised it. But let's just suppose that Microsoft does launch a full-featured surveillance chatbot to actually watch whatever is happening in your web browser. The best and first example that they can come up with is if you are furniture shopping and you ask a chatbot while you're on a furniture webpage that I want a Memphis design vibe. Excuse me. None of this makes a bit of sense. If I'm going, first of all, if I'm going furniture shopping, the last thing that I want is to have to deal with some stupid Microsoft chatbot like Clippy on my shoulder watching what I'm seeing and offering their quote-unquote helpful tips. Do you have any questions? It looks like you're searching for a love seat. Can I tell you about the Memphis design vibe? Because let me just tell you, if this becomes popular, and I can't imagine it will, who would want this, really? But if it did become popular, let's say Microsoft launched it throughout everything in Microsoft and they demanded that this be turned on, the next thing that would happen is that the chatbot would start nudging you to go to the furniture sites that have paid off Microsoft to get first billing in the chatbot. It's so obvious. The surveillance is never the end in itself. Surveillance always needs to be monetized. And in this case, in this stupid example of using tremendous amounts of energy and water and who knows how many data centers in order to have a stupid Clippy chatbot in order to tell me what furniture to look at. Even in that example, the profit case here is for companies to pay to get better listings in the same way that Google search results over the years have become corrupted in a pay-to-play scam. The more you pay Google for their ad listings, the better you tend to do. This has all been documented, and Google has gotten in trouble for it. Microsoft wants to make profit from its surveillance. And so it is, even if it started as quote-unquote benign, as offering stupid tips on furniture, eventually it would turn into an outright money grab. And your private data would be totally compromised along the way. So my point is, having a surveillance chatbot watch everywhere you go in your web browser, first of all, destroys all of your privacy. And second of all, over time, there's no chance it would offer any helpful content. It would eventually go down to the lowest common denominator that would make Microsoft maximal profit off of that surveillance data. Now, Microsoft does claim in that Vox article that it was going to, quote, delete all of the information from every session after you're done. There's so many different ways Microsoft could get around this. They could delete the information, but not delete the correlation. They could delete the information today, but not tomorrow. They could, they could share the data and then delete it. There's so many ways they could technically be telling the truth here, but still be adhering to their model of maximizing profit through surveillance, which is exactly what their business model is. And about recall, I have this quote from the BBC on the playlist as well. That recall, when it came out, was, quote, labeled a potential privacy nightmare, prompting the tech giant Microsoft to postpone its release. Microsoft now plans to relaunch the AI power tool in its new Copilot Plus computers. So again, Microsoft Copilot, an AI-enabled feature that they're putting a lot of money behind, is actually a surveillance feature, and recall is going to join this surveillance chatbot watching everywhere you go online. Let's move on, shall we? As we're talking about big tech and surveillance, you know, there is one big tech company that is very, very explicit about their aims for surveillance. You know, in contrast to companies like Microsoft, they say, no, we're not about surveillance. We simply want to help. And so we're going to record everything you do online purely for your convenience. You know, Microsoft is always dancing around the truth as though they're embarrassed to finally admit that all they are trying to do is sell your privacy for profit. Why don't they just come out and say it? I don't know. But there is one big tech company that comes out and says it, and that's Palantir. This is a company whose CEO is Peter Thiel, who was one of the PayPal co-founders, one of the most influential venture capitalists. He's a multi-billionaire. We've talked about him before on the show. And he is pretty tight with the incoming administration in the U.S. in a number of different ways, which I don't need to get into. But very influential, both in Silicon Valley and in D.C., very wealthy, and the CEO of Palantir, which is a surveillance company. This company works with the military and law enforcement, bringing in data from all sorts of surveillance cameras and sensors and platforms and systems and collating it all and making it available to those law enforcement or military bodies for their own analysis. Of course, Palantir sits on top of all of that. So Palantir has access to an immense amount of surveillance data on all of us and people outside the U.S. as well. I find it very scary, but, you know, I guess people at Palantir are pretty excited about it if you're inside those walls. And incidentally, if you know your J.R.R. Tolkien, you know that Palantir was this kind of evil crystal ball in the Lord of the Rings series that allowed the bad guys to carry out horrible acts based on their unwarranted surveillance of the good guys. And so, be that as it may, Peter Thiel named his company Palantir, and it is now surveilling all of us. Well, I bring this up because a surveillance company CEO Peter Thiel was recently interviewed by Piers Morgan, who's a British interviewer, newscaster, commentator, and they talked about a variety of things, but Piers Morgan asked Peter Thiel what he thought about the United Healthcare shooter, and in particular, the people who are cheering the person who gunned down the United Healthcare CEO in Midtown Manhattan. And I thought Peter Thiel's answer really, I was interested to hear it because it gives us a look into how he thinks. This guy who's so influential, kind of interesting to hear what goes through his mind when he's asked a rather obvious question about the news of the day. And I want to play you that excerpt from the Piers Morgan interview so you can also hear, you know, what a thoughtful guy Peter Thiel is and again, how his mind works. So here's Piers Morgan interviewing Peter Thiel.
And to those who think this shooter is a hero because he did it because he said this healthcare executive was presiding over a healthcare system which kills thousands of Americans by denying them cover, what would you say to them? I don't know what to say. I still think you should try to make an argument, and I think this is you should, you know, there may be things wrong with our healthcare system, but you have to make an argument, and you have to try to find a way to convince people, and change it by that. And this is not going to work. I don't know. Yeah. There are all sorts of things one could say about it, but I think the motives feel, I don't want to go into all the particulars here, but I don't think there's anything heroic about him.
Okay. Again, that was Palantir CEO Peter Thiel speaking with Piers Morgan and fielding, again, the rather obvious question, what do you think about the UnitedHealthcare shooting, and in particular the people who are cheering the shooter? Interesting to hear how Thiel's mind works. By the way, I did not edit that at all. So that stretch of dead air in the middle was part of the interview. The other thing is, if you've seen the video footage, you can see that Thiel's skin was shiny with sweat or something. He did not look well. So, and I don't wish sickness on Peter Thiel. I hope he gets better. Whatever it was that was ailing him, but you would think that for a question like that, he could say something. It could be short and to the point. If he wants to deflect and move on to other things, you just say, okay, first of all, murder is wrong. No one should go out and murder somebody else. And second of all, we need to work on our healthcare system. What else would you like to talk about? That's all you got to say. There's your media coaching for the day. Let's go on. Let's talk about another Lord of the Rings reference. By the way, if you go to the playlist, tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, you can see the memes that I have posted for your enjoyment, and they are all Lord of the Rings themed. And I'm a Lord of the Rings fan myself, and I feel like if you're going to be referencing the Lord of the Rings, you should have just a modicum of respect for the text and the author who did such good work on building this world and the languages and the lore, and really spent a large part of his professional life building and delivering this to us, and not make a mockery of the whole thing. And yet, with Palantir, there's a company that thought it would be funny to name their company after one of the evil surveillance orb that figures into the story. And here's another one. And these are not the only two companies, but here's another one. There is a company, and I'm not making this up, okay? Not making it up. There is a tech startup now called Sauron. S-A-U-R-O-N. Yes. Sauron, which, of course, in the Lord of the Rings, is the source of all evil. I mean, it's not enough to be Palantir, which is the tool that the source of evil uses and weaponizes against the good guys. No, we have to name our company after the source of all evil, Sauron. And yes, for the Tolkien super nerds out there, I know in the Silmarillion that Sauron isn't actually the source of all evil. I know it gets worse than Sauron, but let's just work with me here, okay? Lord of the Rings, Middle Earth at that time. Sauron is the source of all evil. And we now have a tech startup that has decided to call itself Sauron. And Sauron, of course, what does Sauron engage in? Well, if you know the story in Lord of the Rings, Sauron has this flaming eye that can surveil all of Middle Earth and is always looking for who is doing something good that threatens the evil in the land so that it can send out its evil forces, the Nazgul, these ghost kings on these riders to go and basically go out and murder whoever is doing something good. It's a pretty dark story, actually. And this tech startup named itself Sauron because it is a surveillance company. Yeah. This is from the Washington Post, December 5th, 2024. Fearful of crime, the tech elite transformed their homes into military bunkers. Quote, cameras and sensors surveil the perimeter, scanning bystanders' faces for potential threats. Drones from a deterrence pod scare off trespassers by projecting a searchlight over any suspicious movements. A virtual view of the home is rendered in 3D. Ooh, 3D. And updated in real time. This is the vision of home security pitched by Sauron, a Silicon Valley startup boasting a waiting list of tech CEOs and venture capitalists. And later in the story, just check out this quote. Sauron is still figuring out how to incorporate drones, but it is already imagining more aggressive countermeasures, co-founder Kevin Hartz said. Quote, is it a machine that could take out a bad actor with a bullet or something? Okay. So we have AI surveillance and autonomous lethal weaponry, possibly delivered by drone. All in the service of security for ultra-wealthy tech CEOs and venture capitalists. And there's a waiting list. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, this is the world that we're living in. This is the economy that we have, that the elite of the elite industry that is the prime mover in the economy, which is tech and venture capital, is literally waiting in line for a company called Sauron to use its surveillance powers to police the perimeter. Just the word perimeter, when you're talking about your home, who's on the perimeter? You have a problem, friend, if you were worried about policing your perimeter as though it is a military operation. What community do you live in that you need to potentially, quote, take out a bad actor with a bullet or something? I mean, do we have a heart in this economy anymore? When the elite of our economy are naming their companies after famous characters from literature that embody evil in order to separate themselves from the rest of the community and dream of solutions that can deliver lethal force to anyone who the machine decides does not belong there. Because if you've read anything or if you've heard anything about AI systems for detecting people and detecting threats, you know how prevalent the false positives are. And you know how biased those false positives have historically been. And so the person who could take a bullet, quote unquote, could be an innocent person who happens to be walking by and maybe doesn't fit the demographic that the AI surveillance system likes for this neighborhood. Outside of the norm for this, let's say, homogeneous neighborhood of tech elite, CEOs and venture capitalists. Is this the kind of society that we want to build where the resources of the most highly educated, trained, and paid individuals in our society are looking for ways to surveil and deliver lethal force to their neighbors. You can't even make this stuff up. I said in February this was a dystopia update, but I mean, this really is dystopian. Let's move on. Let's go to another vector of possible surveillance. Well, I think it's likely surveillance, and this one is closer to home. This isn't in California. Tectonic, of course, here, based here in Jersey City, New Jersey. The state of New Jersey recently is on alert because there have been many, many, many hundreds of, perhaps thousands of reports of things, lights, balls flying in the air, balls of light or lightning, drones, are they? Potentially aliens, some people say. There are these unidentified floating visual stimuli in the night skies. And people have said all sorts of things. You know, I tried to see what it was. I have my own hobbyist drone, and I tried to fly my own drone up there, but my drone wouldn't work. When the lights were over my house, my drone wouldn't fly. What's happening? As though the aliens had somehow turned off his drone. Other people have uploaded to social media these short videos showing these drones, or whatever they are, the lights in the sky, and look at them, they're in formation. Look, there's 10 of them. I've never seen anything like this before, and everyone's wondering what this is. So let's just all calm down for a second. I think there are, let's say, three possibilities. Maybe there are more, but let's go with three. Number one, it's something totally pedestrian that for any given sighting. I don't mean all of them, but let's say for any given sighting, number one, it could be something really pedestrian and boring. It's a plane off in the distance on the glide path on its approach into Newark Airport. How about that? Because planes at night have lights and they seem to be floating depending on what angle you've got. So maybe it's a plane. Nothing to worry about. And maybe everyone's just kind of keyed up from these news stories, and so they are seeing things and are more nervous than usual. That's number one. Number two, on the other side of the spectrum, maybe it's aliens. Okay, let's say it's aliens. But you know what? I just have a problem with this. Because back in the 50s and 60s, the aliens were flying saucers around that looked suspiciously like the Frisbees that were popular on college campuses around that time. And were figuring into sci-fi movies and novels and things. And how is it that this advanced civilization has come 22 and a half light years to the solar system and has chosen our planet and in 2024, and it just so happens to be the year or two after drones have achieved widespread familiarity with the public. A lot of people have hobbyist drones now. And all of a sudden, what do you know? These aliens from 22 and a half light years away just so happen to have started flying drones. What a coincidence. What a massive coincidence that the aliens now, just now, have decided to start floating drones over our heads. Possible, but I'd say unlikely. And the third possibility is that they are drones, and they are unidentified drones because there's some sort of government or military operation that is being tested out, and for, you know, confidentiality, top secret, I don't know, reasons, they're not divulging to the public what the test is or what the drones can do. And so for a given sighting, I think it's really unlikely that it's an alien. Sorry for everyone who's hoping for more alien news. I think it's possible, depending on the distance and everything, that it could be a plane or a helicopter or something off in the distance. And I think the most likely version, if it's doing something really weird, and we don't know what the hardware is, it's probably a drone, and it's probably our own drone, and it's doing something that's for a test. However, I just want to point out to the theme of this particular show, drones are used for really, if you're the government or you're the military, they're used for two main purposes. One is to deploy weapons, deploy munitions, you know, missiles or dropping grenades or whatever, bombs, whatever. The other, most common, is surveillance. Why would you float something over somebody's house or beach or a park or anywhere else in public if you don't have a camera attached to the thing? The government and military are not floating drones for fun. They're doing it for surveillance. So this is another item. This whole drone issue in New Jersey is another item in our year of surveillance. I am almost out of time, friends, and I have now gotten through the most recent surveillance news that I haven't had a chance to cover in recent shows, but there are so many more stories from the past 12 months in our year in surveillance. There's Facebook monitoring each Facebook user being monitored by thousands of companies. There is an AI surveillance camera being placed in hospital operating rooms. There is the NSA buying your internet data without warrants. There is another Silicon Valley company, actually Colorado-based spy satellite company called Albedo, founded by Facebook alums and Lockheed Martin and funded by Bill Gates and others, that it's going to be sending up satellites into space to spy on you and your neighborhood. There is vending machines doing facial rec, of course, erroneous and harmful on college students. There was the story about automakers and their horrible privacy policies. It was shown that of all auto brands, all of them, the very worst, most privacy-busting company of all of them was Tesla. Of course, but of course it was, because of course it was Tesla. If you buy a Tesla, your privacy is going to be compromised. There was a story out of the San Francisco Chronicle about Teslas now being used by police to get footage from the Tesla's surveillance cameras, because I hope you know that if you walk by a Tesla, you are on camera, and that footage can and will be sent to Tesla headquarters for rendering and storage. There was the FTC finding that should have surprised no one, that social media and online video firms are conducting vast surveillance on users. This is about Facebook, Meta, and Google, and TikTok, and others sharing troves of user information with third parties. We've known this for years, but yes, the FTC made it official and put it into a report. And then we've got Norfolk, Virginia. This is a city on the east coast of Virginia with about 238 residents, which has installed, quote, this is from Ars Technica, a network of cameras that make it functionally impossible for people to drive anywhere without having their movements tracked, photographed, and stored in an AI-assisted database that enables the warrantless surveillance of their every move. And there is a lawsuit now going on in Norfolk. Good on those plaintiffs to try to win back a shred of our privacy, at least in Norfolk, because again, case in point, if we can win that one, then we can win others. It's time to fight back, friends. Our year of surveillance is not the last year we're going to have to endure this. In fact, it's only getting worse. So at some point, we need to fight back and tell these companies and show these companies we are not going to take it. We're not going to take this warrantless surveillance of our private lives anymore. That's the time I have for you this evening. I do have some homework for you for next time. I want you, until I come back, oh, by the way, I'm gone next week. Don Fleming, the great Don Fleming, is going to be guest hosting. I'll see you in 2 weeks. And by then, here's your homework, okay? I want you to avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google. And I want to thank the great Evan Funk Davies for inspiring me to play our outro this evening, a song by the Killer Whales called Who Controls the Video Screen? And that's a good question for all of us. Have a great 2 weeks, friends, and a great holiday. I'll see you next time. You're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County, and 91.9 FM, and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned for Dave Mandel. Who knows?
And good evening. Welcome to another installment of It's Complicated, an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. I'm your host, Dave Mandel, here with this program every Monday evening at 7 p.m., hot on the heels of Mark Hurst's Tectonic show. Thanks for joining me. Welcome. Got a great show for you tonight. Well, maybe. Could be. Quite possibly a great show. You never know. We're going to start this evening's show with music from Sweden, from a Swedish guy named Simon Steensland, or Steensland, depending on how accurate you want to be with the local pronunciation. And we're going to hear a track, from, believe it or not, from a 2009 album called Fat Again. And I say believe it or not because it could pass for something a lot older than that. It's not a put down. On the contrary, I was listening to this today, preparing for tonight's show, and I was just amazed at how much of Henry Cow, Art Zoid, these bands I heard. Well, you be the judge. Simon Steensland sent me a track called Hide and Seek from the 2009 album Fat Again.
Love.